Hello to everyone tuning in. I'm Carmen, and thank you for joining us for this audio version of My Horse Heart. If you read my last blog post, you'll know that this is the first in a series of interviews I hope to do where we get to hear how other people's lives have been changed by following their hearts and what that means to them. Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Santi Espinosa. Santi is a multilingual stand-up comedian and economist. He is the host of the very successful comedy showcase, It Matters Comedy, in New York City. He has performed all across North America, as well as London, England. The Montreal Gazette has described him as, quote, funny, whether ranting about the Donald's reading material or his dating rituals. He has fared well in the Big Apple, hosting the showcase, It Matters Comedy, and working with the likes of Jim Gaffigan and Gary Gulman, end quote. You can listen to his podcast, What's Going on iTunes, where he conducts his own interviews with a variety of people in the world of comedy. Santi is also my brother-in-law, and he's joining us from Montreal. So with that, welcome to My Horse Heart, Santi. Hello.
Hi, Carmen. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. So happy to have you with me today. I loved giving your intro because it's quite impressive what you've been up to. And I particularly enjoy that you're a comedian and an economist. Talk about two different worlds. What's that like?
I know it's something that I didn't plan when I graduated. You know, I started doing both at the same time. I never thought that I would be committed to both of them to the level that I've been for 7 years or six, yeah, 7 years. And so it was very, you know, strange at the beginning. You know, people didn't understand how I could balance something that's kind of like intellectually heavy and kind of, you know, very formal, like being an economist, you know, talking to people about capital markets, stuff like that, and then go and do stand-up comedy in front of strangers. So that was very bizarre when I first started doing it, but it makes sense. It's starting to make sense more and more the more I combine both worlds. It's different because you're working different parts of your brain. So I think I've mastering that balance, and so far so good.
Right on. So I've done my best to describe what it means to me to have a horse heart in my post, My Horse Heart and Yours. What does living with a horse heart or by your heart mean to you?
I think it means, let me preface by saying that I like your blog. I love it. Actually, I don't like it. I love it. I'm a big fan. And my definition is probably very simple, which, you know, in my humble opinion, would be to be true to yourself and follow your passions and trying to just pursue the stuff that you find valuable and that adds, you know, to be redundant, value added to your life, and just follow your heart in terms of do things that make you happy.
That's great. So how do you think that's affected how you're living your life now?
Oh, it's I'm a guy that overthinks everything. I tend to, you know, do the best I can every day and then go to bed at night and get kind of like run like a program in the back of my head and just go, what did I do today? Did I do it right? Was this something that I was proud of? And I always have this evaluation at the end of the day, and I think this is played out being able to follow my heart and do things like comedy and do my job to the best I can, because I don't want to let people down. I'm exhausted when I finish the day. I'm literally tired, and I know that I did a good job at following my heart and being able to be the best I can when I go to bed and I fall asleep and there's no trouble. I just pass out and I wake up the next day. I was like, okay, I did everything I could to make that happen. So I think that it's been interesting growing up and kind of becoming an adult and making, you know, decisions that I never thought I would be able to make, like getting married or commit into two cities and things that are very, very grown up. Like, I never thought that I would be in this place in my life where I could, you know, just do those things. And so I try to be honest. I try to be earnest, and I try to do the best I can every day by, as I said before, following my heart and just, you know, be the best I can.
Do you think that's part of how or why you're doing comedy?
Yes. I don't think people know this, but I started comedy because I needed an outlet at a time where it was very, very dark in my life. I had challenges that, you know, I went to Bishop's University, and Bishop's is known in Canada for being one of the craziest party schools. Like everything, you know, you go to Frosh Week and it's insane. It's like a movie. It's like American Pie. You know, people are just on the rooftops and it's crazy. So I went to Bishop's and I had the best time. It was great. I met so many people. I was part of a lot of activities, and it was great. And then I graduated and I was ready to just, you know, I was ready to conquer the world. And then, you know, soon after I graduated, my mom was, you know, diagnosed with breast cancer. And so I had to kind of like come to terms with the idea of my mom possibly, you know, dying. And you know, and then I would go to work because I got my job right away. And then I found out that my mom, you know, had cancer. So it was very hard for me to cope with these things. And comedy came right at that time when I took an improv class, and that class kind of like saved my life because it gave me a complete outlet. Like I disconnected from this reality that I was living in, and I was being part of a group that there was no judgment, there was no past, there was no legacy of any problems. It was just me being in the moment and doing an exercise with a group of people that were welcoming and friendly. And that opened up the gates for stand-up, because one of the people in the class was a comedian, and he said, "You're really funny. You should, you know, have you ever thought about doing comedy?" And that's how I got started. I went to an open mic, and I've been doing it since.
Wow. How's your mom now?
She's great. She's good. Conquered cancer. So she did the whole nine yards. She did all the treatments, chemo, radiation, all that kind of stuff. And she's a tough one. She's a tough cookie. She followed the entire steps that she had to follow when you get diagnosed with breast cancer. And she's a trooper. She just went to every appointment. She took it day by day, week by week. And that was very, you know, to see my mom just being just open-minded about all the procedures and everything. And shout out to the Canadian, you know, healthcare system, because they saved my mom's life. It was great. She, you know, they were very professional. Every appointment was, you know, very vital for her process, and she made it, because everyone was very responsible, and I'm very appreciative of that. So she's good now. So she did the whole cancer steps, and some people don't make it, but she fortunately made it.
Right on. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that you following your heart into the world of comedy helped you be a better support for her and for yourself during those times.
Yeah, yeah. The funniest thing was that I would walk into the chemo room, and this is the Montreal General Hospital, and it's crazy because you get to see people getting, you know, treatment for cancer, young people, old people, and they were in, you know, some people are obviously sad because this is it's a very dramatic time in their lives, but there were some people that were willing to have a good time. They were trying to, you know, cheer up and be, I guess be a good sport and just support other people. And I would just go in and I would talk to the nurses and you know, I would tell them like, "Hey, I'm doing comedy," and it would become like this comedy show where I would be cracking jokes in front of the nurses, and they're like, "Oh, that's funny. You should do it at the open mic." Like it became a comedy show at the chemo room, which would made no sense. And they were very proud of me because they saw that I was really trying. Because I went to every appointment with my mom. If it was not my sister, it was me. But we would always try to go with her. And they were excited to see me every time. It's like, "Oh, your son's here. Like, oh, let's, like, how's a comedy thing going?" And it was very cool. Comedy is very – if you're a comedy – whether you're a comedy fan or not, you have to admit that, you know, laughing and you know, having a good sense of humor heals and strengthens your day to day. It's just laughing, having a good laugh, having a good joke, makes you much more, you know, less, you know, cranky and more able to be friendly to other people. And I believe that having a good sense of humor and being able to laugh is it's very important.
For sure. And bringing some light to some darker times, and even not just light, but actually a good laugh to release some of the tension too.
yeah, exactly. And, you know, things are always crazy. Life is always crazy. You know, politics, all kinds of stuff. There's always something going on. Like you go to in history, there's always something that people complain about. And comedians are you know, some people turn to comedy to forget about or to just alleviate their pain. You know, you know, make things like, oh, that's funny. It's not as bad as I think it is because someone made a really good joke about that. So yeah, comedy, you know, my job, people went from being like, what are you doing in comedy? Like, do you really want to be a comedian? To asking me when my next show is going to be. They're like, oh, we want to go to your show. So the people that I work with as an economist, are supportive of my comedy career, which is something that I always, you know, when I first started, that was my dream. To being accepted and not being judged by, oh, this guy's a weirdo. He's doing comedy. He's not taking his job seriously. And now everybody that I work with, it's impressed with the fact that I'm able to keep two things going at the same time.
That's wonderful. So when you had people telling you, like, you know, kind of what are you doing or giving you a bit of a hard time, in the moment, how did you respond to those challenges?
You know what? I felt that I definitely had this idea that, oh, maybe I'm not going to be good at my job. If I do comedy, I'm not going to be able to do my job 100%. Or people, I'm not going to get that promotion, or I'm not going to get more responsibilities because they think that I'm not as committed to my job because I do this comedy hobby. And so there was definitely a fear of not being taken seriously in the work, in my job. I was afraid that the partners or the people that I was working with, they weren't going to be able to see the potential that I had with regards to my actual, you know, profession that I went to school for. So that was definitely a fear that was in the back of my head. But I needed comedy so badly. I needed it because working a 9-to-5 job can be, you know, it can get to you at certain points because there are definitely busy times where you don't, you know, time goes by fast and it's great, but there are also times where you, you know, it's a slow day and then you can be in an office trapped with, you know, your thoughts and you're just going in circles and you're kind of just figuring out life. So I needed comedy because, you know, I didn't want to have time to think about my mom possibly dying. I didn't want to think about my, you know, past stuff, like my this kind of like bubble life that I had at Bishop's. Like it was painful because it made me feel selfish when, you know, now that my mom was into this thing. So I was having conflicting thoughts, and I needed comedy so badly that the fear of not being able to be taken seriously at my job became just a fear. I wasn't going to listen to that fear. I was just going to do both and see what happens. And then gradually people were like, okay, so you're doing this comedy thing more and more. You know, we want to check you out. We want to see when your next show, you know, just let us know. And, you know, people that I worked with came to a couple shows. They're like, oh, you're actually very funny. How much did you get paid doing your comedy? And I was like, I got paid with a beer. And they're like, oh, my God, that's really sad. It's like, yeah, I don't do it for the money. I just do it because it's fun. And they're like, oh, okay, we get it. And more and more, the higher management started to notice that I was able to be, you know, in meetings, I was more vocal about my thoughts and I was articulate. And they're like, oh, you know, Santi is this comedy thing is improving his public speaking and his ability to express himself. So why don't you, you know, let's put him on the phone with clients or let's do this. So embracing my comedy allowed me to do other things at my job, and that I probably, if I had done just my job, I wouldn't be able to done those things, you know. So they saw that I was not doing my job half-fast. They said that I was just as committed as my comedy to my comedy as I was committed to my job. So they delegated more things, and they always seemed like impressed with the idea of doing both. And one of the highlights that I had in my comedy and job careers was when I was in London, England, one of the partners, one of the higher, the higher management people, was in happened to be in England at the time. We overlapped at the same time, and I had a comedy show that night. And he's like, "Hey, you have a comedy show? I want to go see you." So he saw me do stand up in London with a bunch of like famous comedians in London, and he, like, after the show, he came up to me. He was like, "Oh my God, that's so cool." So for me, seeing one of the higher management people giving me compliments because I had done stand up in a totally different country, like London, England, like I would have never thought that that was going to happen. So it kind of gave me that validation that I needed of, oh, you can do both things if you commit to if you're true to yourself and you follow your heart. If you, you know, like, I don't want to lie to my employers and I don't want to lie to them about my commitment, but I also want to showcase that I have this passion that I want to do.
That's really cool.
I'm not hiding my, you know, my comedy dream from anyone. It's visible for everybody. If you Google my name, you'll see that I'm 100% comedy. But if you Google my name on LinkedIn, you see that I have this entire resume that backs my entire academic history.
Right. And if I'm listening to what you're saying through the lens of this blog, it really sounds like through this following your heart going towards this comedy world, even though there was a lot of anxiety about kind of merging the two and what that would look like, it sounds like you really brought such a deeper part of yourself to you, to your work, to every aspect of your life through following really your passion and through following this other side of yourself that's maybe even allowed other people in your life to consider following their heart in some ways.
Yeah. I've gotten friends of mine that I never expected them to give me compliments, you know, people that I went to bishops or fellow actors that I've known throughout my, you know, comedy, journey. That they, you know, they say, "Hey, we are, you know, we follow your path and we're impressed with the things that you've achieved. And, you know, the fact that you've never given up and that you have been just delivering, you know, your message every single day, every week on a back to back every week." They're like, "Hey, I'm doing this thing because you kind of gave me the incentive and you motivated me to do a web series," or other people would be to join a softball team or to do extracurriculars that I never thought, because we see that you're clearly in a job that's very demanding, but it doesn't stop you from posting when your next show is going to be. And that meant a lot to me because I was not expecting that. I lost friends when I started comedy because I would be like, "Hey, come to my comedy show." They would come a couple times, but then they'd be like, "Okay, that's enough. We want to hang out with you as a friend. We don't want to go see your comedy." So I lost friends just because I didn't know how to hang out with them anymore. I was just like, come to my shows. And there's a point, you know, if you're friends with someone, if they're only inviting you to the comedy shows, then if I put myself in their shoes, it's like, okay, I'm going to stop being friends with Santi because he only cares about me going to, he just sees me as a number. He doesn't care about me as a friend. So I recognize that maybe when I first started comedy, I was very self-involved in that, and I probably forgot what it was like to be a friend or what it was like to be a person. And I never hung out with my friends like I used to. That definitely affected my relationships with them. But later in life, when, you know, things kind of like calmed down with my mom and I became funnier in stand-up and I became more confident, then my friends that I hadn't spoken in several years, they kind of just came up to me and just gave me really, you know, like, they had good things to say and they gave me compliments. So it made me feel that I wasn't wasting my time, or it just gave me a bit of a sanity.
Yeah. And I can get to that when we're following our heart and into something new, and it's really, it's so passionate what we're in, you know, starting this new endeavor, it can be hard to kind of make time for everything, kind of figure out the balance in life of how much to put here and how much to put there. And sometimes things take so much commitment that it can be really hard to make time for the things that we wish we had time for as well.
Yeah, it's hard to balance all the, you know, aspects of your life, right?
Yeah.
I became good at balancing work and comedy, but then there's this other aspect of my life, which was, I want to get married. I want to be with someone. Like, I want to be emotionally, happy. And I think that was the next step in the past 3 years, where I was trying to figure out like what I wanted for my personal life. You know, what is it? Where do I see myself in 10 years from now? And that was a big question mark. And so, you know, the more you get, I guess the doing a job, will be rewarding, and it will be satisfying if you grow every single week or if you grow every month. And then you definitely reach a point where if you become really good at your day job, you should move on to better and higher things, because you will plateau and then you won't grow. And then I'm the kind of guy that does something, and if I become really good at it, I want to move on to the next thing. I don't want to stick around and just be complacent and just stay, you know, I hate that. So when I reach a lot of stuff in my job, and comedy as well, then I had a lot of spare capacity to think, okay, now I'm sad, I'm home. Yeah, I'm in New York City, it feels great, but when I get home, I'm not happy. Like, there is something that, like, there's a, you know, empty heart that I like to, you know, talk about the heart. I'm not completely satisfied with what I'm doing. And that's where my wife, back then my friend, came into play, right? I would talk to her every night, or I would talk to her whenever we had time as friends. You know, it was a very, very just, you know, I loved her as a friend. And I started to feel things like, oh my God, yeah, I mean, I feel happy when I talk to this person. Like, I feel that there is something. But we had lives in different cities, right? So I was in New York, she was in Montreal. And so talking to her was great, but I mean, I've never believed in long distance relationships. Like, if you're in two different cities, and you're not, you know, like, I never believed in that concept, because it seemed to me that it wasn't doable. Because if you don't see the person frequently, then you'll forget what it was like to be with them. But that wasn't the case with her. She was the exception. I know. I just wanted to talk to her. I just wanted to see her. And so one thing led to another, and then we ended up dating. Which was, you know, was the best thing of, like, to this day is one of the best things that's ever happened to me. And it was great. I kind of, like, it was organic. It was natural. It was meant to be. And she supports my entire lifestyle, which is very weird to find. Like, not a lot of people understand what I do. And she definitely, because she was my friend before I started, she's always my friend. So she wasn't judging me. She wasn't going, what are you going to do with this? She knew exactly where I was coming from. So she became a support system.
That's so important. And it sounds like both your hearts were really strong and courageous in starting that relationship together. And I know from my own experiences with Solana, my sister-in-law, she's a lovely person. So really happy for both of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's good.
So who's inspired you along the way?
Oh, that's, can I have a couple people?
Yeah, of course.
I think the main role model has been my mom. You know, I think that I see her as the strongest person, ever. She was a single mom, and she, you know, she's a Colombian immigrant. She moved to different countries, like the States and Canada, just to make sure that I was going, like, that I could be the best I could be, because it wasn't, in Colombia would have been a lot harder to do that. She worked really hard every day, and she had so many challenges. You know, she was a single mom, you know, she, you know, minority woman, and she had look after me and my sister. And so she accomplished so many things as a person. She never had time to think of like, oh, let me be a comedian. Let me be a she could have been a singer. She has a beautiful voice. She had so many other talents that she never thought about exploring those things because she didn't have the time. She had to literally work her, just to make sure that we were going to be okay. So she's my number one role model, and she thinking of, and then that's why the cancer thing, when she was in this very painful process, instead of making me a self-destructive human, which a lot of people tend to do when you reach a very dark, you start doing drugs or you start doing, drinking or whatever, it gave me just more energy and fuel to, hey, look at all the stuff that she's accomplished. Look at all the stuff that she's done. You can do so much better, and make sure that she understands that. So she's my number one role model. Number two, again, family, my sister, same deal with her. She is a very strong person. There's a big difference in age. So she was also kind of like my mom. Both of them, I was the little boy. I was given everything. I was always making sure that they were always making sure that I was taken care of. So I had nothing to worry about until I was like an older person. So both of them are, for the same reasons, role models. I don't want to use the adjective, but I mean, on a more superficial level, or not as I guess emotional. Comedians that I've idolized, and the comedians that I've I've been listening to since I was like a little boy. Jim Carrey, one of the people that once you get to see this guy's career, you're, oh my God, how could you go from being this guy in Ontario that does open mics at Yuck Yucks to become this huge movie star in Hollywood, just changing so many people's lives? Some people may think that he's crazy, but I respect and admire his entire journey. And if you look at his background, he had a lot of similar stuff like I did. Like his mom was sick, he had to be the funny guy at home, and he was forced to be a comedian, and he became one of the best of all time. And he had a quote that meant a lot to me 7 years ago when I started doing comedy, which was his dad got fired at his actual day job, being an accountant. And his dad never wanted to be an accountant, but he got fired. And he said, why would you be disappointed or get heartbroken working at a job that you never wanted? Why don't you be disappointed and brokenhearted at a job that you wanted to be? That's why that's what he said. Like, that's why I didn't care. I just did comedy, because if I was going to be disappointed and heartbroken, I'd rather be those things doing something that I love, not doing a job that I didn't want to do. And so that quote was like, oh yeah, I mean, why waste your time? You're only here for X amount of years. If you do want to do something, instead of complaining or thinking about it or like, oh, what if, just try to get into it. And so Jim Carrey had a definite influence in my life. Another person, just not to make it too, because I could, talk forever. another person that changed my life and is a role model is Solana's dad. Dom Pompeo was also a very important part of my life at a very critical time. So I said that I took an improv class that changed my life. Well, the teacher of that class was him. He was the first person that believed in me as a comedian or as a performer. And I don't even know how to articulate this, but he kind of saw something in me that I didn't even see myself. He honestly got to know me on a whole different level. And a very, in 2 years, he got to really talk to me like he was like like my dad or like my best friend, he was just being like, hey, what do you want to do in your life? You want to be a comedian? He came to the first open mic I ever did. That open mic that I did 7 years ago, he was front row with all the improv class that we had at the time. And he gave me feedback that my mom couldn't have given me or my sister couldn't have given me or anyone that I know. He knew how to talk to me and the stuff that he did in his life. So also has been a huge influence and just motivated me to be the person I am today. So funny enough, to be married to his daughter, it's kind of like supernatural. Like, I don't even know how to explain.
I think it's wonderful. And I love all your examples of people who inspire you because, and including Jim Carrey, I don't think that's superficial at all. Because all of them really are displaying this tremendous courage in what they've done in their lives and perseverance. And there's also this sense of encouraging you in their different ways to make the most of your life and follow what is a life really well lived if you're not incorporating what's important to your heart, if you're not really making your every day mean something to you. And whatever that is. So I think those are really inspiring examples to me as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And for sure, I wish Dom could be here talking to us for this podcast as well.
I think he listens to my podcast. I think on some level, he's always like making sure that I keep it together. not to get too crazy on this podcast, but when people like that make a huge impact on your life, and then they happen to die or go somewhere, I don't think they ever go to I think that part of them sticks around and make sure that you're doing if you believe what they said to you, you will never let them go completely. Like, they're not going to disappear. There's definitely some part of them that's in you, your personality, your the way you think, the way that you react to things. So, I think
I love that. Yeah. And that's such a nice way to honor Dom too. Yes. So if Santi, if you pictured your life 10 years ago, like if you pictured your life, what it would have been now, could you have imagined 10 years ago what your life would look like?
No, not even a little bit. 10 years ago, let's see, 20. Yeah, no, I had such a different life plan. It was not like, it was not this, I was not expecting any of this stuff that happened to me. Probably 20 years ago, I just wanted to get paid money and, just get promoted. And I had maybe on some level I wanted a stable life, and I wanted the chick flick movie. I wanted a nice home, a hot wife, and and the dog. And on some level I think that was my plan, but it didn't have the meaning that it has today, right? Like I wasn't expecting all the ebb and flows of my life to go like the way they have been. There's no even a remote part of me that thought that I would be where I am today. There's no chance.
So good change from your expectations back then?
It the best things that happen in life are the things that you never expect. Like the unexpected events are the things that make you grow up so fast. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy that I've been part of this, multicultural. I'm so fortunate to be to be the person that I have been. And maybe if I narrowed the time frame to 5 years, when I was doing comedy, When I started doing comedy, I wanted to be famous. That was my, 5 years ago, I was like, oh, by this time I'm, 7 years into comedy, I'm going to be, I'm going to be famous. There's going to be people wanting my autograph. And that obviously hasn't happened because no one knows who I am. But it doesn't matter. And that was the biggest learning experience in the past 5 years in doing comedy is that you get to perform with Jim Gaffigan, you get to perform with Gary Goldman, you get to perform with people that happen to have success in comedy. That doesn't mean anything, because what tells you that they're completely happy? What tells you that they have this professional success actually means personal success? And there's been a lot of development trends in comedy or show business that have made me understand that you have to take care of your personal life and be responsible with the public and be responsible with your friends and other people to make sure that you never sidetrack or you do something that could hurt others. And so I think that every time that you grow up, like 10 years from now, there's no chance I would have seen myself where I am today. 5 years from now, I had a much more, I guess, greedy, like I wanted to be famous. Now I'm, you know, here today and I'm just so happy to be married to my best friend. I'm so happy to be doing any show that I do in comedy. Being on stage is a privilege to be able to be on stage and talking to people and listening, making them laugh. That's, forget about the fame. That alone means so much than anything. And I'm happy to be employed. I'm not, you know, I have a job. That's good. Having a job is so important. Being able to, you know, buy things and like being able to have an income that where you can support yourself and keep going. So I think that this is the grown Santi talking, when I'm just appreciative of the things that I have rather than have this crazy expectations that I will be famous. So yeah, it's an evolution. And I'm sure that if we have this conversation 5 years from now, I will have other things that I'm proud of. They're like, oh yeah, you know, like we have babies or anything. It's like, I love my babies. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like there's things that always change. And having someone that keeps you grounded, like my wife, it's a good thing.
For sure. And I really like what you said at the very beginning, too, that, you know, especially in this context, adjusting from your goal of fame to now just really being, you know, the goal of being able to lie down at night and know that you lived your day really well to the best you could. Yeah.
That's my objective. I wake up and I'm like, if I don't go to bed, you know, like I need to do so much more. Like if I don't go to bed exhausted, I didn't do a good job.
Yeah. Santi, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Of course. No, I love talking to you, Carmen. I'm a big fan of your blog and I'm happy that we are now in I guess related on some level.
For sure.
Yeah.
And related through the blog too.
Yeah.
It's so great to hear how others interpret their horse arts. And clearly you've been brave in facing and accomplishing a lot of your dreams as well. So check out Santi's podcast, What's Going on iTunes, if you're into comedy, or even if you're not, maybe you want to learn more about it. And thank you so much to everyone who's listening. Till next time on My Horse Heart.